Well, good. My co-author on this presentation is Chungshin Lee, who's the developer of the DNDC model and the new minority DNDC, which we will be mentioning in this talk. And I page down. Hey. Okay, got it. Well, as we've been hearing, there's a lot of different sources and sinks and a lot of different compounds being emitted from our farms, particularly our livestock farms, and pulling that all together to give some kind of an evaluation and mitigation strategies is difficult. Measurement can play a good role in this, but measurement of emissions is expensive. It's slow. It can take years of data collection to really do a good comparison or evaluation. It's often limited in scope, and we can measure the emissions, say, from the barn or the manure storage, but again, how do you measure from the whole farm? And ultimately, whatever you measure is pretty specific to the management and climate of the particular site that's being monitored. So this has led to the recommendation that a process-based modeling approach be used to quantify emissions and to evaluate mitigation strategies. And when this particular publication was released about 10 years ago now, I think it was a relatively new concept to most, not well understood, and I'm not sure it's still very well understood what we really mean by that. And hopefully what I have to say here in the next few minutes can help enlighten that. But what is process-based modeling? I guess very simply, as I would put it, it's a mathematical representation of processes as they occur in the real world. Processes are normally simulated through time as they're influenced by their environment. And then some of the key points are that really processes interact with other processes. And this really can lead to new knowledge and understanding of the system. You know, it's not simply regurgitation of data that's already been collected and stored into this piece of software then that kicks it back out, okay? We really have things going on dynamically inside the model that can lead us to new understanding. A little more about process-based modeling. I think we need to describe the processes at the appropriate level of detail, and I think this trips a lot of investigators. We can't get too detailed, particularly at the farm level, but we need enough detail to really capture the dynamics of the processes that we want to model. This normally requires some type of mechanistic detail, but empirical relationships can be very helpful too. The basic requirement is that these relationships, whatever they are based upon scientifically sound principles, really describing the physical, biological, and chemical processes that are going on. And another thing that I think is confusing is that models can emphasize different processes. So not all models, even if you have farm models, they're not all doing the same thing necessarily, and we'll come back to that point in a few minutes. The gaseous emissions that we are working with include ammonia and hydrogen sulfide, the greenhouse gases, and volatile organic compounds. I'll just go through an example here with the ammonia emission modeling, how we do that. This is not really a new model, but there's some new twists here that make it more accurate, we believe, than what has been used before. When the urea in the urine is deposited, say, on a barn floor, it combines with the feces, the urease enzymes create hydrolysis. This is a function of temperature, and it creates carbon dioxide and ammonium. The ammonium maintains a balance with aqueous ammonia, and this is a function of temperature and pH of the material. Now, the ammonia, the aqueous ammonia, maintains a balance with gaseous ammonia, and this is usually described as what we call the Henry's constant, which is a function of temperature. Now, I think the thing that's been poorly understood in the past is that CO2 is also being released. And as the CO2 emits, it can greatly increase the surface pH of the manure. And because the ammonia level is very sensitive to pH, this increase in pH can really drive the gaseous ammonia up, and this... Well, as indicated here, this can increase the surface ammonia, the surface pH of the manure by as much as a point. I'd say maybe on the average, maybe about a half a point. And then ultimately, the ammonia is carried away by the mass transfer coefficient, which is a function of temperature and air velocity. So that's the basic kind of model we're working with. We can apply the same thing to hydrogen sulfide. Here the sulfur is excreted in the form of sulfate. The sulfate must transform to sulfide. That's a function of temperature, and then it goes throughout the rest of the process much the same. We can also use this model or a form of it in relation to modeling VOCs, but as Steve pointed out, we're looking at a wide range of compounds here. So our approach is to divide the range of compounds up into groups that has similar characteristics, simulate or model an emission for an important compound in each of those groups, track that compound through the various stages of the process from storage through mixing to feeding of the animal. We predict the emissions that are coming off. We basically multiply that by some form of their reactivity to come up with a potential ozone-forming unit to sum it all up. So that's our approach. The model's still pretty preliminary, but we are working on that. For greenhouse gas emissions, there are a lot of different sources and sinks, and modeling those, it's different for every one. But as indicated here, we have our primary sources, which include CO2 and N2O coming off of feed production, the methane and carbon dioxide coming from the animal, primarily through respiration. A little nitrous oxide may also come off the animal. And then wherever manure is found on the farm, we have all three of our important greenhouse gases coming off. So there are our primary sources and sinks that we do model. In addition to that, we'd like to do a life cycle assessment, and this includes secondary emissions. And these are the emissions that come off of the production of the resources that are being used on the farm, things like fuel, electricity, fertilizer, etc. So by looking at all these different emissions, predicting each one, totaling them all up in carbon dioxide equivalent units, so we're just converting methane and nitrous oxide to CO2 equivalent in terms of their global warming potential, we can come up with the net sum of all the greenhouse gas emissions. If we divide that by the number of units being produced, say in dairy, it's milk or energy-corrected milk, we can come up with our farm gate carbon footprint. So the four models that we are working with that I'll just mention here, we have the integrated farm systems model. And as I said, different models describe and work with different processes. The integrated farm system model emphasizes farm processes. A subcomponent of that really is the dairy gas emissions model, or dairy GEM, which looks at manure handling and the animal components and predicts emission processes. Then we have the DNDC model, which has been around for a few years, that really does a very mechanistic look at the soil biogeochemical processes. And now the latest model, manure DNDC, which was sponsored by the dairy industry, this really focuses on the manure handling processes and the manure biogeochemical processes. And I'll just go through each of these just a little bit more detail. But this is the integrated farm system model. We simulate the growth and development of the crop, move it through the harvest, storage, feeding of the animal, and returning the manure nutrients back to the land. And we track the nutrients through the farm, looking at the losses and emissions that occur. This model looks at farm performance, the environmental impact, as well as the economics of the farm. So it's kind of unique here that it includes economics. In terms of environmental impact, it also looks at things like erosion, phosphorus runoff, nitrate leaching, and that sort of thing, as well as gaseous emissions. Because IFSM is fairly complex I'd say difficult to use at times. I mean, you have to know what you're doing. We wanted to create a simpler tool that just looks at gaseous emissions. That's what we came up to create this dairy GEM model. So we basically lift these components out, put them in our own user interface, add some more graphics. It's more of an educational decision aid type tool. Well, the DNDC model, many of you are probably familiar with that. Again, it's very detailed, looking at the biogeochemical processes, tracking them and how climate affects them, and along with the soil properties to predict what's going to come off the soil. So the manure DNDC basically uses DNDC as a component of the model, but it tracks the manure from the animal clear through to the different stages, and then calls DNDC to look at the biogeochemical processes in the manure at each of those stages to predict emissions. A little bit about model evaluation. That's always a question when we start talking about these farm models. We do a lot with the verification of the model, looking at process level evaluation as indicated in the upper picture here, but I'll talk more about the farm scale evaluation that we're now doing. And a large part of that is comparing our model results to that, to the data collected by the National Air Emissions Monitoring Study. Most of you are probably familiar with that. So this just shows a comparison of simulated and measured ammonia emission data for a dairy barn in Indiana. This is a summary across 5 dairy barns in 3 locations. And you can see that ammonia is being underpredicted a little bit in the winter and overpredicted a little bit maybe in the summer and that sort of thing. Hydrogen sulfides here on your this side. Again, there's some room for improvement. We're working on it, but overall, I think we're pretty pleased with how well we can represent. To close, I wanted to just look at some examples of use of this model. These examples are based upon the Dairy Gem model. We have a base farm here, moderate milk production. If we increase that production through genetics and better feeding practices, if we further increase that production through the use of BST, if we look at using high forage diets on the farm, producing and feeding more corn silage, less alfalfa silage, and then finally enclosing manure storage and using a flare to burn the biogas. So this just looks as a look at the what the predicted ammonia, the effect on the predicted ammonia emissions would be. As we increase production, the emission per unit of milk produced goes down a little bit. You can see the rest. Hydrogen sulfide actually follows a very similar trend for these particular cases that we're representing here. This is a look at greenhouse gas emissions per cow. Across the various systems, you can see they're going up as we increase feed intake and production. But if we look at the carbon footprint again now, per unit of milk produced, again, as we produce more milk, we're actually reducing the emission per unit of milk. Feeding more forage increases enteric fermentation and greenhouse gas emission. The thing that you can see here, the one that makes the most benefit, is enclosing the manure storage and burning the biogas produced. So in conclusion, we feel that process-based models provide effective tools for quantifying and evaluating the effects of mitigation strategies. And these software tools are available for use in research and education to evaluate and the combined effects of environmental and economic impacts of mitigation strategies. And we continue to work on them. If you're interested in copies of any of these models, the best way to get them is to do a Google search on the Internet. They'll pop up. Except for Manure DNDC, it is actually not available to the general public right at this time. Thank you.